Hello, my name is Rima Ilebo, MD. I am the medical director of the Natural Solutions Foundation. In addition to having practiced medicine and psychiatry for 53 years since my graduation from the Albert Einstein College of Medicine in 1970, I am also a child and adolescent psychiatrist. That means that I know a lot about child development. I know about children who are developing normally. I know about children who are developing abnormally. And I have a pretty good idea about how to help them and how to do things that don't help them. I also, before I became a child psychiatrist, was trained in adult psychiatry. And that means that I have an understanding of how people function, how they get into trouble, how they get themselves out of trouble. And in my entire 53 years of medical practice, I have done the job of helping people without using any drugs at all. So that means I have a different way of looking at things than a physician who simply suppresses symptoms by using pharmaceuticals. I'm watching with distress and horror and fear what is happening not only to our children, but our society and indeed our very species. What do I mean by that? The World Health Organization has decided that it has the right and perhaps the responsibility to be not an advisory health guidance organization, which is what its charter says that it is, and what we entered into in 1948 when Harry Truman signed the joint resolution of the United States Congress that got us in. And when he did that, Harry Truman wisely said, nothing that WHO wants us to do can we be forced to do if it violates U.S. law and the U.S. Constitution. Good for Harry Truman. The United Nations is supposed to be a world peace promotion forum. Well, things have changed since the 1940s when these organizations gave their grand sounding words. In fact, they and the other associated organizations like UNESCO and the Food and Agriculture Organization and the other subsidiary organizations to the United Nations were all Rockefeller initiatives. Rockefeller, as you know, was the world's first billionaire, John D. Rockefeller Sr., and he was a wildly predatory billionaire who, like Bill Gates and Soros and the other money control class members, decided that they could use their money to shape, to reshape, to control, and at their leisure, destroy society. So although it has great words wrapped around it, both the United Nations and the WHO were designed to carry forward the eugenics agenda, and they've done that very well, and the world control agenda. Now, you probably heard that recently the international health regulations were up for amendment at the recent World Health Assembly in May of 2023, and those amendments would have turned WHO from an advisory body to a controlling body, a tyrannical, quote, health control body that would basically take over the world's economy and the world's education and the world's commerce and the world's travel and the world's thought upon the decision by the director general that there was a pandemic. And since they didn't bother to define pandemic, this thing could be a pandemic and would be, because that would mean they would be in total control of the world's most comprehensive, invasive, and deadly tyranny. Well, that didn't quite happen that way, but they've got a backup plan. The backup plan is the so-called Pandemic Preparedness and Response Treaty, which is being shaped into another total control mechanism. So I have, before we start talking about children and the fact that the World Health Organization's comprehensive sexuality education program is designed to destroy the psychosexual development of every child on this planet, turning them into people who cannot truly attach and bond, who cannot love, turning them into people who don't form the kind of deep connected relationships with themselves, with their partners, with their children, that allows people to both reproduce and be good parents. This is a depopulation strategy designed to produce people who are easily controlled, but not people who can love. When an agency decides that it's going to destroy human beings' ability to love, and decides that it's going to participate in transhumanism, changing the very genetic makeup of those people, and when its captive agencies like the FDA, which I call the Fraud and Death Administration, decide that it's okay to allow an experimental procedure with the Neuralink that Elon Musk owns to put literal controls into the brain of people getting ready to put much smaller, much more pervasive controls in their brains. And we know that transhumanism is very much an objective, as injections supposedly designed to prevent, treat, and mitigate disease, the COVID shots, are actually gene-altering treatments and more. When an agency decides to deceive its worldwide constituents, you have to ask why. And the answer is total, absolute, utter, inescapable control and surveillance. Now, let's go back to the comprehensive sexuality education. The UNESCO organization and the World Health Organization since 2009 have been publishing documents, and they have wonderful graphic artists and they have wonderful wordsmiths who take really terrible ideas and wrap them in beautiful language. It's called jargonization. So they change the way language is used so that you think it means one thing and they think it means another. For example, sustainability. Who couldn't love sustainability? Sustainability actually means complete enslavement. It means you will live in an urban concentration camp. Your movement will be limited to 10 or 15 minute walking radius of your house. Everything you eat, everything you think, everything you say, everything you see, everything you have will be provided by the state. Is that how you want to live? That's how they want you to live. And by the way, you may have heard of Agenda 21, which is now Agenda 2030, which is a United Nations plan supported by the World Health Organization to control every aspect of your lives, including your fertility, and in fact, whether you exist. So the World Health Organization, UNESCO, and the United Nations have been advancing this comprehensive sexuality education program since 2009. That's the first document that they created that I'm aware of. And what it means is different from sex education. This is a very important distinction. Sex education is based in fact. This is a vagina. This is a penis. This is what they do together. This is how you get pregnant. This is how you don't get pregnant. This is what a sexually transmitted disease is like. This is how you don't get those. This is how you maintain your own personal sexual integrity. That's really useful, and that helps people have information that they need as they're growing to make their own age-appropriate decisions about what they want to do. Now, every human being on the planet who has not been corrupted by this insanity or is not themselves a pedophile, that is an adult who wants to have sex with children, every single person on this planet knows that premature sexual experience is traumatic for children, is hurtful for children, stunts their psychosexual growth and development, makes it difficult for them to love, makes it difficult for them to have further normal sexual relationships. Raping children hurts children. Molesting children hurts children. Hypersexualizing children, stimulating them with sexual information that is beyond their need to know, their developmental need to know, and beyond their ability to comprehend, hurts children. These are actions that damage children. Freud said children are sexual from birth, and that was scandalous in his time in the Victorian era. But we now know that children have feelings throughout their entire body. Children gradually learn what gives them pleasure. They gradually learn how to masturbate. They gradually learn social mores of what's private, what's public. They gradually learn how to touch other people appropriately and not touch them appropriately, how to keep social space, how to not allow themselves to be touched in an inappropriate or disturbing way. Those are normal steps that children take bit by bit by bit. So when a two-year-old says, "Mommy, where do babies come from?" the information that they need and the question that they're asking is a different question than when a seven-year-old says, "Mommy, where do babies come from?" because they have a much greater grasp of particulars and consequences and subtleties at seven than they do at two. We all know this intuitively. But the World Health Organization, which is about anything but health, says we now have a curriculum that everyone in the world, whether they are in a culture that believes in this or not, is supposed to follow. Everyone in the world is the parents of every child from birth are supposed to start hypersexualizing the child, teaching the child to masturbate. Children do not need to be taught how to masturbate. Every child on the planet has figured out how to masturbate. Finding it is not a problem. But children are taught, or parents are being told, that children need to be taught how to, by the age of four, and this is a quote, develop lust. No. Children do not learn how to develop lust in a healthy environment. That is hypersexualization for the purpose of the adults, and it stunts and damages the children. It focuses them on something that should not be the focus of their development. It's a bad thing to do, whether you're in North America or South America or Asia or the Middle East or Africa or Antarctica. It doesn't matter. It's a bad thing to do. But the WHO says, oh, yes, parents need to do that. And then from the age of 4 to 6, children need to start having sexual relations with one another. They need to begin touching and prodding and inserting things. We're not talking about playing doctor here. We're talking about full-blown guided sexual contact. Now, one of the insane things that's happened is this pathological organization called WHO, along with a pathological organization called the United Nations, and the pathological organization called UNESCO, they have conjointly decided to take the concept of a human right and pervert it. How do you pervert a human right? You make up rights. For instance, they are now saying, both in the March 8th United Nations document that is written for jurists, for judges and lawyers all over the world, and in the comprehensive sexuality education program that we're talking about, they are now saying that it is a human right for children to have sexual partners as early as possible. They say in the comprehensive sexuality education that sexual activity should start as early as possible. No, sexual activity should not start as early as possible. They say that children at the age of 6 should know how to give each other oral sex and anal sex. And if they can, I guess they would want little boys to be able to insert their penises into little girls' vaginas. This curriculum wants to hand out little plastic clitoris models to 4-year-old little girls so they'll learn to explore it, and then they'll explore themselves in a way that is driven by the sexual intention of somebody else other than the child's own development. And that is inappropriate. That is child abuse, in my view. And so they've taken schools of education, they've taken people who want to be children, who want to be teachers, especially elementary school teachers, but not only, and they've perverted their education for decades now, and they've taught them that it is the job of the teacher to be the morality source for children, not the parents. Oh, they can come along if they want, but mostly it's the school. That if a child is a transgender child, and we'll get to that in a moment, if a child is a transgender child, then the teacher should hide that from the parents and not tell the parent what is going on with their own child, and encourage the child to be something that the child is for social reasons, but not for reasons coming from the family or their own biology. The judicial report of March 8th by the United Nations says, hey, let's decriminalize everything that has to do with sex. Let's decriminalize anybody having sex with anybody. So if a grown-up doesn't use the word pedophile, that's true. The fact checkers are saying, nope, this report does not decriminalize pedophilia, because they don't use the word pedophilia. What they say is anybody of any age should be able to have sexual contact with anybody else, irrespective of age, and that should not be a crime. That sounds to me like decriminalizing pedophilia without using the P word. This is part of the program of making children accessible to as many other people as possible, eventually their own parents and siblings, in order to destroy the ability of people to live in harmonious families and rear children successfully and safely into independent thinking people who are able to form strong bonds. Now, why would the World Health Organization and the United Nations want to destroy the family? Well, go back to what I said earlier about John D. Rockefeller creating the shape that later came into existence as the World Health Organization, and creating the shape that later came into existence as the United Nations. His view, and it was clearly articulated, he and his son, John D. Rockefeller Jr., and their science, and they brought in all their wealthy friends like Henry Ford, who was a eugenicist from way back, just like the Rockefellers. And they brought in Carnegie, and they brought in lots of other wealthy people, just like Gates today, who decide that because they have the money, they have the authority to shape the world. Well, how did he want to shape the world? John D. Rockefeller Sr. and Jr. and the rest of them were early supporters of eugenics. They believed that only the fit should multiply, and they, of course, decide who the fit are. They supported the eugenic scientists in Germany before the Second World War, which they financed. And they supported the eugenics, quote, scientists after the Second World War, bringing them in addition, separately from Operation Paperclip, bringing them in the Displaced Scholars Program, thousands of them that they supported, and even founded the Population Council in 1951. That's long after the German Holocaust had officially ended, even founding the World Population Organization. In 1951, John D. Rockefeller III and Alan Dulles of the OSS and CIA got together, and they put this together, quote, to further eugenics concepts. Really, that's 1951. Now, Rockefeller said that it was necessary to destroy the family in order to control the world. And so he set about doing things in his time to destroy the family. And these philanthropies have continued very carefully to control government by training people on how to govern around the world, in the same way that they control medicine by training people on how to practice medicine around the world and setting up elite tiers and so on. So they've done that with governance. They've done that with education. They've done that with sexuality. Now, John D. Rockefeller Senior and Junior supported Alfred Kinsey. Alfred Kinsey was a crazy person. He had a PhD in entomology. His specialty was the gall wasp, but he decided he was a sexology expert. And so he was very interested in what was, quote, normal sexuality. The whole purpose of the whole Kinsey Institute in Illinois, sponsored by Rockefeller, the whole purpose of it was to destabilize and destroy sexual mores, ethics, and limitations. That was part of Rockefeller's plan, and it's working very well. So he had a team, and this is historically documented. This is not controversial. This is horrendous, but it's factual. He had a team of pedophiles, many of whom had been former Nazis. He had a team of pedophiles who would generate data for him. They would rape infants and young children, and they would clock how many orgasms the child would have, or how long the child's orgasm lasted. Well, how do you know if a baby, a five-month-old, and we have data, we have their charts that tell us what they were observing, and it's all very precise. How do you know if a baby is having an orgasm when you're raping it? Well, here's how they defined orgasm. If the baby cries, yeah, when you're raping a baby, it's gonna cry. If the baby has a convulsion, if the baby loses consciousness, if the baby becomes unresponsive, you know, enough trauma, and you can get a baby to withdraw to the point where it's no longer responsive. That is possible. And you can do the same with children quite easily. So these people were intentionally traumatizing children, and it was being called science. And then Kinsey published his first report, a big thick book about normal sexual behavior in the male, and another one, normal sexual behavior in the female. And there was nothing scientific in his research, but it was lauded as a great advance. And what it said is, everything is normal. You can do anything to anybody at any point for any purpose, and that's all normal. Every orifice is fair game. Any relationship is fair game. Just do it. And then, of course, we had the sexual revolution, and we had the consequences of that. And I am a child of the 60s. I was there for the sexual revolution and the loosening of prohibitions and so on. And I happen to think that taking people out of straitjackets that don't apply to them is a really good thing. But telling people what is not real is real. Making up biology, making up sociology, making up sexology, and lying for political purposes in order to dominate and control people, that's not okay. And that is precisely what is going on. Now, let's talk about transgenderism. This is going to make a lot of people very unhappy. What I'm going to say is, in fact, scientifically based, not politically based. In fact, one of my dear colleagues with whom I share a great deal of conversation and strategic planning and tactical choice making about how to carry out political activity that occupies my life pretty much full time at this point as the medical director of the Natural Solutions Foundation. And if you want to see more about that and become involved, I suggest you visit a site called PreventGenocide2030.org. PreventGenocide2030.org is not just an information site. There are actual actions that you can take that can change the outcome of this pitched battle for humanity's continuation that we are in. So back to transgenderism. In 1973, the American Psychiatric Association redefined homosexuality, and they said, guess what? It is not a disease. It's not a disorder. It's not a perversion. It's just another way of being. Okay. What that says basically is, if people want to love other people of the same sex, they can do that and we won't call it a problem. If they have other problems like depression or obsessive compulsive disorder or mania or whatever, that's separate. And I happen to think that's a fair definition, because I believe that somebody over the age of consent, and yes, there is an age of consent, somebody over the age of consent is fortunate to find love wherever they find it. So if somebody has a homosexual relationship or a heterosexual relationship, but it's a relationship in which there's love, I say, congratulations. And the American Psychiatric Association said, it's not a disease. It's not a disorder. Homosexuality is just a choice. Okay. At this point, the American Psychiatric Association, which I resigned my membership in quite a number of years ago, because I think a great deal of what they do is absolutely wrong. But whether it's wrong or right, they have something called the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, the DSM, which is kind of the diagnostic strategy that people use for psychiatric and psychiatrically related disorders. Well, the DSM-5-TR, which is the most current one, has something in it called gender dysphoria, which means it's a problem. It's a psychiatric diagnosis if you think that you're not the gender that your body is. So if you think you're a man, but you're in a woman's body, if you think you're a woman, but you're in a man's body, that's called gender dysphoria. And along with gender dysphoria, you can have depression or anxiety or manic depressive disorder or dissociative disorder, whatever else you've got. So they're separate, but it is a disorder according to the psychiatric fellowship. Now, psychiatrists give drugs. So it's great. If they have another disorder, then they can shovel out more drugs. I happen to think that that's an inappropriate way of treating people, but that's a different story. So there is a DSM-5 diagnosis called gender dysphoria. There's another diagnostic system. By the way, the DSM is used all over the world for psychiatric diagnoses. There's another diagnostic schema called the ICD. It's an international coding system. The current one is ICD-11. And ICD-11 is owned by the World Health Organization. They own the diagnostic system called the ICD. And they have decided that gender dysphoria no longer exists. What they have is gender incongruence. Why do they have gender incongruence? Because flipping back to this comprehensive sexuality education, and remember, sex education teaching about sex and reproduction is one thing, but sexuality education is teaching children to be sexual for somebody else's political requirement. And young children in this comprehensive sexuality education from the age of 4 to 6 are taught that their first sexual relationship should be homosexual ones. And for instance, children at the age of 6 are given a checklist to decide whether they're ready for sexual activity with somebody, whether they want to have sex with somebody. Let me point out that in a normal, sane classroom, nobody is asking 6-year-olds whether they're ready to have sex, because any sane human being who has not been proselytized out of their mind knows at a gut level that no 6-year-old should be having sex. Sexual exploration, figuring out what feels good in their body, that's a different matter. But sexual encounters, no. Nobody should be stimulating that. That's problematic behavior. That's not normal behavior, but it's being taught. And on the checklist that a 6-year-old is being asked to fill out to determine whether they're ready to have sex with another particular person is, do you like that person? That's not a criterion for sex. Do you want to hold hands with that person? Children hold hands with each other. That's not the same as, now go have sex. Do you want to have oral sex with that person? What? You're asking a 6-year-old to determine whether they want to have oral sex? Do you want to have anal sex with that person? These are 6-year-olds. This is insane. This is intentional hypersexualization designed to stunt sexual maturation and development to make people easier to control. I could go on and on and on and on about the things that children are being taught, including medically dangerous factual distortions like, and this is from one of their textbooks, an HIV positive child has the right to determine at their own discretion whether or not to reveal that they are HIV positive to their sexual partner. Really? Really? You want to agree with that so that your child is encouraged to have sex with somebody who's decided that although they're HIV positive, they're not going to tell your child? We're talking about very young children whose discretion and whose ability to make decisions like that is not based in very long-term judgment or deep world experience. We're talking about children. Those same HIV positive children are taught in a very attractive cartoon-like book for them that whether or not they choose to use protection, for instance, a condom, is also at their discretion. And remember, they don't have to reveal that they're HIV positive. Something about somebody's human rights being violated here, I would say. Children are also being taught a lie, a biological lie. They're being taught that you can choose your gender. Well, here's the biological incontrovertible reality. You don't have to like it, but you don't have to like the fact that the sun rises in the morning and sets in the evening. It does. You can't change it just by wishing it away. Well, children are being taught that there are lots of genders. In fact, one article that I looked at 2 days ago says that there are, this is a scholarly article by somebody who has a degree but has no sense or knowledge of the real world. There are 68 genders. No, I'm going to make your life really easy. There are 2. One is called male and one is called female. If you have 2 X chromosomes, you are a female. Whomever you choose to have sex with, that's another story, but you are a female, and a woman is an adult female human. End of story. No debate. If you have an X and a Y chromosome, you are a male. Ah, but what about intersex people? What about people who have 3X chromosomes, for example. You know, it's fair, I think, to say that human beings are a bipedal species. We are a species with two legs. The vast majority of human beings have two legs. Every once in a while, somebody might be born with only one leg or no legs. That's called an inborn error of metabolism, a genetic problem, or it's called an environmental tragedy. But it's not normal, and it doesn't define human beings. There is something called Turner syndrome, in which a baby is born with three X chromosomes. And it's a big problem. All kinds of things go wrong, and there are fertility problems and mental functioning problems and many stigmata in the body. It's not a good thing. But it does happen sometimes. Errors happen. And that doesn't mean that normal females have three X chromosomes. But children are being taught, adults are being roped into this nonsense that you can think your way into a different gender. Now, it's possible that what's happening pseudoscientifically and socially for political purposes is that the whole term and concept of gender is being erased. So that gender means whatever you want to be today, honey, but that's not what gender means scientifically. If words have any meaning, and if you're going to communicate accurately, it's useful to have a vocabulary where you agree on the meaning of words. Gender means the biological specificity of male or female. But what about intersex people? Every once in a while, and it's very rare, there is an accidental genetic error that occurs in which somebody is born both with internal female sexual organs and external male sexual organs. Those people are called hermaphrodites. And it's a very, very serious and disabling problem. Like Turner syndrome, the triple X syndrome, it's a big problem. It doesn't define normality. People get tuberculosis, but the normal state of human beings is not to have tuberculosis. So defining normal by saying, well, abnormal things do happen, is profoundly unscientific. That's not what the definition of normal means. The definition of normal is the expected, ordinary, biological, reproducing state of the species. You know, just it's fundamental biology. And thinking yourself to be something else doesn't make you that other thing. Now, what about transgender infants? A psychologist at Brigham Young Hospital, which is part of the Women's and Brigham Young Hospital, which is part of the Harvard Medical System, announced that children are transgender in the womb. And her evidence for that was nil. There is no evidence because it's nonsense. You may have heard of Lamarckian genetics. This is analogous to Lamarckian genetics. In the Soviet Union, when Stalin was the dictator, he had preferences. He liked certain things and he didn't like other things. And he wanted it to be true that the new man, the new human being, could be created by having human beings live in the Soviet society, and that each generation would come closer and closer and closer to being the new man that was predicted by Marxist ideology. And so there was a geneticist named Lysenko, and Lysenko said, hey, boss, listen to this. When I cut the tail off a mouse, and then that mouse breeds, the next generation of mice have tails that are shorter. And then when I cut the tails off those mice, the offspring of the first mouse, their tails are shorter yet. and we can keep on going, and we will get to mice that have no tails. And Stalin said, that's cool, because that means that we can make the new man by changing the environment, and gradually we'll just make us the new human being, the socialist human being. And so Lamarckian genetics, which was an error at the very best, Lamarckian genetics became politically correct. And geneticists inside the Soviet Union who said, no, it doesn't work like that. That's wrong, boss, were executed. They were sent to the gulag. They were killed, and their papers couldn't get published, and they lost their teaching jobs, and they lost their research jobs. And suddenly, everybody believed in Lamarckian genetics. Everybody in Russia was doing experiments and getting Lamarckian results, and the genetics was thriving, except that it was politics, not science. Lamarckian genetics doesn't work. And that's exactly what's happening with vaccinology, with the safe and effective kill shots, which were neither safe nor effective if the goal was prevention and health, but very safe and effective if the goal was genocide and the creation of long-term chronic disease leading to death. Very safe, very effective. You could be sure that that's what you were going to get if the shots were used. So what we have is the equivalent of Lamarckian genetics being taught to children. You can change your gender. On the cover of Glamour, in the current issue, there is a person with a very pregnant belly in a man's suit, which is open because men's suits are not designed to fit the expanse of a pregnant belly. And the person standing there is has a man's haircut. And it's celebrating the first time a father gives birth, except it isn't. This is Lamarckian genetic nonsense. This is a woman who, quote, identifies as a man, and her husband, who is a biological man, impregnated her. The fetus has grown in her womb, which she has because she's a woman. She can do make-believe and pretend to be a man. I can do make-believe and pretend to be a salamander. But I'm not a salamander, and she's not a man. Let's be clear about this. This is a delusion. When you believe, and what do children do normally? Is there anybody listening to this video who did not at some time in their own childhood say, you know, I want to be a girl says, I want to be a boy. Boy says, I want to be a girl. It's part of the normal development and questioning, unimpeded by politics and make-believe science and child abuse, of who I am. What does it mean to be me? And people, children, experiment. Today I'm a fireman. Tomorrow I'm a policeman. The day after I'm a nurse. Next week I'm an airplane pilot. Now I'm a bunny rabbit. This is how children grow and how they learn. But when they say they're a bunny rabbit, we don't go out and surgically disrupt their bodies, plant ears on their heads, and give them fluffy tails. We say, oh, that's lovely, darling. What does it feel like to be a bunny rabbit? And tomorrow they're a space astronaut. You know, that's how children grow. But what we're doing for our own political craziness is concretizing what children say and encouraging it. In California, one of the legislators there has just introduced a modification to a bill that passed, has to be signed by the governor, which may happen, that if a parent does not affirm a child's gender preference, that parent can be held guilty of the crime of child abuse. Excuse me? What did you just say? So now we have this economic enterprise built on affirming gender identity. There is only a limited number of genuine gender identities. There's one called boy, man, and there's one called girl, woman. And they don't need, oh, by the way, children are being taught as young as 2 years old in storybooks with lovely cartoons. Children are being taught that doctors, and this is a quote, doctors are only guessing when they assign a baby's sex at birth, when they say it's either a boy or a girl. I'd like to point out that nobody assigns a gender. You identify a gender based on how that baby is built. So if the baby has a penis, surprise, it's a boy. And if the baby has a vagina, what do you know? It's a girl. There's no ambiguity. Nobody's assigning gender. So that later when a child says, I'm really a boy or I'm really a girl, even though my body's the opposite, they get gender affirmation. No. They should get some help if they get confused in determining who they are. They should have a therapist they can talk to, not one who is forced to agree with them. Because if you're exploring something and the only thing you get is somebody agreeing with it, you never get a chance to finish the exploration. And these are normal explorations which are being hardened and concretized into what somebody else wants, having nothing to do with what's good for the child. So first thing we do is we now have gender affirmation clinics. There are 214 pediatric residency programs now teaching gender affirmation medicine. What is that? That means that when a child first comes to you, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, you're not allowed to say, what makes you think you're really a boy or what makes you think you're really a girl? If you're in this gender affirming world, you have to say, okay, you're really a boy or you're really a girl, in spite of the fact that there's no science showing that that's true. And oh, by the way, depending on the study, 75% to 95% of children who at some point say, I'm really the other sex, by the time they finish puberty, have come to a comfortable resolution that they are actually a girl if they have a woman's body or a girl's body, or a boy if they have a boy's body. So this is a normal process of childhood that kids literally grow out of as they grow into their own identity. So arresting that process and making scads of money off it is, to me, a wildly abusive thing, to say nothing of what happens politically when kids have been hypersexualized and have trouble with their identity in every area for the rest of their life. So we have puberty block. Oh, first we have the initial intake, and allegedly that's supposed to be paid for by taxpayer money. Okay, I can see an intake process figuring out what's going on with a kid as part of the reasonable payment that a taxpayer might make. Now we get puberty blockers, children who are younger than their normal biological puberty age are getting very powerful drugs, the safety of which is not only unknown, but the dangers of which are well established. These are powerful, body disrupting, brain disrupting, blood disrupting, liver disrupting, bone disrupting drugs. They're expensive and they're damaging. And then we get to the kid now getting to the point of puberty. And now the child goes on hormones from the other sex. So females get testosterone and males get estrogen. In spite of the fact that heart disease, cancer, neurological disorders, including dementia, bone disorders and vast numbers of other problems, including major emotional problems like suicide level depression, come from taking these hormones. The safety is not only not established, the safety doesn't exist. This is a dangerous terrible thing to do to a child's body. The changes are irreversible. You're talking about making somebody sterile. But of course, under the United Nations March 8th report, the age of consent for anything is any time. And in fact, in New York State, one of the members of the legislature there has brought a bill out of committee, which is going to go through the Senate and the House of New York State, which says that the age of consent is anything. So if you have an infant in your hands and you want to do something to it, you say, I'm affirming that the child has consented. This is a newborn baby that you want to give a vaccine to, and you're the caregiver. The parent has no right to say anything or know about it, really? So this entire travesty and insanity includes the necessity of dissolving parental rights, as in California. If a parent says, no, you're not a boy, what are you talking about? Or why are you saying that? Or no, I'm not going to take you for surgery so you can have healthy body parts surgically removed. I'm not going to do that to you. That is child abuse. When in fact, the reality is encouraging that is child abuse in a child. The standard of care in states where children are not able to make those choices, like Oregon, where they are able to make those choices from the age of 11. Think about any 11-year-old you know and ask yourself whether that 11-year-old can make the choice to have her breasts permanently removed or to have his penis and testicles removed. Think about that and ask whether you think that that child has the mental, emotional, life experience, perspective, and ability, no matter how smart they are, to make a choice like that and then to carry it through in the absence of parental knowledge or consent. Just think about that. Well, so what we're talking about is destroying parental rights completely. Parents then become the custodial, functionaries. So they have to provide food and shelter and clothing, but they have no right or role in guidance, in conferring values, in teaching the way the family or the culture or the religion looks at sex, marriage, education, reproduction, personal goals, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The parents are just what, hotel keepers who are responsible for room and board for this stranger in the house? That's where we're going. That's where we're going. Now, this is happening legislatively and it's happening educationally. And unfortunately, the medical profession sees the money. There's one surgeon in Texas who has 12 gender assignment surgical centers in the San Antonio area. 12. That means people are coming in and he's whacking off body parts and rebuilding body parts and lengthening clitorises to make micro penises. Yes, yes, this is real. This is what's happening. And taking breasts off and building breasts up that don't exist and mutilating people and causing them to be permanent customers. That means for the rest of their life, they will be dependent upon, addicted to the drugs that have to be given to maintain this pseudo identity of a mutilated human being who believes delusionally that they are something else because they've cut their hair and they've shown themselves to be a different person, like this delusional crazy lady on the cover of Glamour magazine with her hand on her pregnant belly. She's so proud, who says, I'm a daddy who has given birth. No, my dear, you're a delusional woman who is batshit crazy, and poor baby is going to be raised by two daddies, one of whom has a vagina and uterus and fallopian tubes. What? And this crazy lady is writing a book called In My Daddy's Tummy. No, the child was never in the daddy's tummy. the mother is delusional. And, you know, God bless her if she wants to be delusional. Think about the child and think about all of our children if we permit this to go on. Now, right now in Glendale, California, just a couple of days ago, 200 parents demonstrated outside the school board meeting where they were talking about teaching this stuff. This stuff doesn't belong in schools. This stuff doesn't belong in your children's vision. And if Disney is telling your princess that she's really a prince, and Disney is telling everybody that everybody is everybody and everything is everything, find another entertainment source. This is bad for children. This is really toxic. And the sad thing is, I don't know about Disney. Maybe they're really just misguided people. I don't know. Maybe Dylan Mulvaney is just a misguided person. I can't speculate on that, although I can tell you it's really bonkers. What I do know is that you can damage children very easily. Children are impressionable. We know that. That's part of their being children. You can damage children for life by lying to them about what's real inside themselves. And that's what this whole system is predicated upon. And then what goes with that is the hypersexualization and making every child ripe for predation by older children, by younger children, by adults, by teachers. There is a video of a teacher in a classroom full of six-year-olds, and she is instructing a little girl on the fine points of her technique while she's giving a little boy a blowjob. This is not good for children. Might be great for the teacher. She might be having a terrific day, but that's not what she's there for. She's there to guide and encourage and assist children, not mutilate them emotionally, psychosexually, and socially for life. So this is happening. Now, what is PreventGenocide2030.org? And you can go there and go to PreventGenocide2030.org/our-children. We have a section here with the documents, because I'm not making this up. WHO and the United Nations and UNESCO have decided to make this up. So what is WHO? What are we saying when we look at the fact that WHO, the United Nations, and UNESCO are involved? We're saying that this is part of a brutal and destructive future that they have in mind for all of us. This is part of Agenda 2030. This is part of One Health. This is part of total totalitarian control. Now, you can save your children by either taking them out of school or public school, or by joining other parents and preventing this programming from being incorporated in your school. And those are important things to do. But there's something else that's even more important to do. This is an octopus with many tentacles. Parental rights is one. Sexualization of children is another. Destruction of informed consent and mandating treatments is another. And there are many, many, many of these tentacles, and every one of them is vitally important. The only way to kill this beast is to kill it at the center. And that means we have to get our country. I happen to live in the United States. Wherever you live, what I'm saying is true for you too. We have to help build the political will necessary to force our legislators to get our country out of the World Health Organization first, then the United Nations. It is critically important because they are awarding themselves control power, domination, legally binding powers, Nobody elected them. Nobody appointed them. They've just convened themselves, a la Rockefeller's grand plan, and they are intending to dominate the world. By the way, the World Health Organization's main donor is the Bill and Melinda Gates cluster of foundations, including the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and Gavi and the others. So Bill Gates' depopulation and control intentions drive WHO and are very important in the United Nations as well. This is no accident. This is intentional destruction of every segment of human society, including our genome, so that we can be mostly disposed of, and the few of us who remain can be an underclass of serfs, more oppressed and more surveilled than any part of humanity has ever been before. It all goes together, the whole child molestation thing and the surveillance thing and the vaccine passports, which have now gone into effect apparently in the European Union. All of this is part and parcel of the same totalitarian control system. So protect your children, your grandchildren at the local level and in your family and in your home, and get them out of this toxic environment, yes, but then take the next step. At PreventGenocide2030.org, there are actions to take to demand of your legislators that you get out of the WHO. There are other websites that are advocating the same thing in other countries. Find them, use them, share them, and then motivate the people around you to join you in building the political will. One or two or 10 emails is not going to do it. Several million will. So it's up to us to generate several million emails by telling everyone we know that this is a huge problem and that there is a solution. It's not a local solution, and it's not a particular solution to one problem or another. It's a central solution to kill the octopus. And right at the center of the octopus is WHO. We need to leave it. Oh, but doesn't it do good things? Nope. I have written a book called The Singing Pig. WHO, The Singing Pig. It's about the fact that you can put lipstick on it, but it's still a pig. And he whose bread I eat, his song I sing. So this particular pig is singing the song of the depopulation, enslavement, special interests that run it, that finance it, and it will kill you, and it will destroy your children. PreventGenocide2030.org is a great place to start becoming informed and educated. If you need more information, it's there. This is vitally important, and this is not a random, irrelevant sort of issue. This is central to the very nature of your life, your family, your community, your religion, and you as a human being, because that's all under attack. My email is dr.rima@naturalsolutionsfoundation.org. It's in the information below this video. If you have questions or thoughts or would like to help deal with this, please contact me. But whatever you do, get involved. Help get your country out from under this death system before it destroys us all. Thank you.